Around Comics, Episode 24.
From Chicago, this is Around Comics, a weekly roundtable discussing topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman, and I am joined, as always, by my partner in crime and the producer of the show, Brian Salazar.
Hello.
And back from a business trip to whereabouts unknown is our Around Comics regular, Mr. Tom Caters.
It was New York City.
And our guest today is the artist of the soon-to-be re-released Athena Voltaire. He is Steve Bryant.
Hi, I'm calling from parts unknown.
You live in Illinois. We know where you're from.
I'm the midway between Chicago and St. Louis.
You know what they call that?
God's country.
Or the middle of nowhere.
So are you a Cards fan or a Cub fan or a Sox fan? Or you hate baseball altogether?
Actually, I'm the voting equivalent of a straight ticket voter. It's all Chicago stuff, but I really can't root for Dusty Baker because the guy's such an ass.
However you answer that question, you're not going to win because you basically have a Cub fan, a Sox fan, and a Cardinals fan on this side of the panel.
I'm not a Cubs fan.
There's no Cub fans here.
Yeah.
No?
Hey.
No Cub? Oh,
Mark.
Oh,
okay.
All right. Okay. Well, I got a couple quick reminders for everyone. Around Comics is recorded every Friday from 7 to 9 at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please come by and introduce yourself. We would love to meet you. Dark Tower is now offering a 20% discount on purchases made during our show recordings. Just mention Around Comics when you check out and receive 20% off your purchase. It's that easy. Our June contest is in full swing. This month, write a comics or a Round Comics themed haiku and email it to info@aroundcomics.com. Remember to include your name and city or country of residence. This month's contest winner will receive a trade paperback currently in print, $24.95 or less. Our forum at Around Comics is growing every day and has been a lot of fun. We found out that some people have had a few problems registering. If that is the case, just email Sal at info@aroundcomics.com and he will get you taken care of. If you enjoy Around Comics, please drop by the iTunes Music Store and write us a review. We would greatly appreciate it. A lot of podcasts ask you to vote at Podcast Alley every month. We would just like you to write one quick review and be done with it. All right, that's all of our front-end announcements there. On to this week's topic, we are putting away the paper and long boxes and breaking out the laptops and external hard drives. That's right, we're talking about web comics. You can find them in just about any format and for just about any reader. Web comics are becoming a bigger part of the comic scene every day. Our guest Steve Bryant's comic, Athena Voltaire, started out as a web comic. So we'll start with you, Steve. Why did you guys decide to launch Athena Voltaire as a web comic as opposed to a traditional paper comic?
Well, before I answer that, can I read a haiku?
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you officially entering the contest?
No, I'm officially doing shameless self-promotion.
Oh, okay. He has an Athena Voltaire haiku prepared.
All right, let's hear it.
Let's do it.
Athena Voltaire, coming soon from Ape Comics. Buy it in August.
That was
very
shameless.
Nice. That, very nice.
The whole time you were doing the pre-show stuff, I'm sitting here counting off on my fingers. That's pretty pathetic.
So was Tom as you were reading it.
He's like,
just to make sure it was valid.
You know, so my entry is official, right?
That's right.
Okay. It's not going to win, though.
It. Yeah.
Okay.
You got no chance.
But it didn't have anything about monkeys.
Athena Voltaire. That's five.
Okay. Now I'll stop distracting us. I'll try to be a responsible.
All right.
Panel member thing.
Web comics. Why did you guys go that route?
Back when we were shopping the book around, you know, as a pitch, this would have been 2001, 2002, there really weren't a whole lot of outlets for creator-owned stuff. Wildstorm was doing creator-owned stuff, but you had to be a name creator. And that pretty much left Image. And I don't think we were quite ready at that time. So we got rejected from Image. and we had heard of a startup called AdventureStrips.com, which was run by a subscription service called ModernTales.com. And we submitted, and they liked us, so we just kind of dove right in feet first and tried to beat the bushes for as much, publicity as we could, contacting reviewers, sending them links, all that stuff, and tried to build something around it from that angle.
Were you guys fans of webcomics before you decided to go that route, or is it just it just ended up being the best way for you guys to get Athena out there?
I really wasn't familiar at all with them at the time. The only thing that I was familiar with was Steve Connelly with Astounding Space Thrills, which also really briefly was on Adventure Strips when we were. And, I had seen how he had kind of transitioned from web to print. I think initially he was self-publishing, and then I know he went with the Image, I think around 2000. So that was kind of a template for us.
Well, do you see more creators that are looking at webcomics as a way to get into the industry without investing a tremendous amount of capital to get a paper book up and running?
I think it's a viable alternative, but I don't know how many people are really exploring it, just because the whole thing of having to research who's publishing, webcomics and stuff like that. I don't know how many people are actually trying to float their creator-owned stuff out there on it. I'm an advocate of it because it worked pretty well for us.
Well, it seems that there are a few webcomics that are starting to make the transition over. Obviously you guys, and then what, PvP?
PvP.
Penny Arcade.
What's that?
Penny Arcade.
Yeah.
Mega Tokyo, I think.
Yeah.
From somebody.
Yeah, Mega Tokyo still.
And you're seeing more and more. Were you from the beginning, once you decided to go to a web comic, was it always with the plan of eventually printing a comic after that? I mean, was that your goal at that point, or was that something secondary?
It was always the goal. When we went to Adventure Strips, it was kind of tightly formatted. All the comics had to be in a horizontal strip format, which I always knew that if we were to go to print, you'd have to turn the book on its side and stuff like that. And by the time we were about two or three episodes into our second story arc, Adventure Strips was dying, and we were going to move over to the main Modern Tales site where they didn't have those restrictions. So at that point, we actually thought about switching to the vertical format for our second arc. But my whole thought at the time was that if we were to print the first arc, it was only 32 pages. That's not enough for a trade. So, that was the whole motivation for finishing up on the horizontal format, was trying to think about packaging it for print. And so we wanted to have at least, 80-some pages of material
so that
we could eventually do a trade.
That's one of the things that I'm seeing. I have admittedly never been really exposed to webcomics. I've never really, I love comics. I use the internet all the time, and shame on me, I haven't really got into them. So this last week or two, I started reading, a lot of the suggestions off the forums, and it seems that there are a couple different types of webcomics. There are people that do webcomics. That's why they're there. That's their passion, and that's how they prefer for their creations to get out to the general public. But then you can tell that there are people doing webcomics because they want to get picked up by a publisher. And do you guys feel those two different types of creators out there?
Well, I think certainly you have that line where it's, and I think it's part of maybe a problem with webcomics is that it gives the ability, there was a lot of people complaining when like print on demand first came around, because you had this huge flood of independent comics, and a lot of it wasn't very good. you had some stuff that came out of that that was good, but a lot of it was because it just gave the ability for more people to produce work. And the same thing with the web, even more so with web comics, anybody can, you know, easily put up a web comic. It doesn't have to have
just like
any quality.
Anybody can do a podcast.
Yeah, any idiot can do a podcast. And but so I think you have that, you know, you have those different classifications of people, you know, people that are definitely looking for the future and for wanting to, you know, print something, and then you have people that are just doing it for the fun of it or for whatever reason.
All right, well, we did have some people chime in on the forum this week, and it was like 50-50. It was a lot of people like Papercut that says, I have to admit that this is an area of comicdom that I think I'm severely lacking. He did mention that that he reads PvP Online and Nordwick, and very periodically Penny Arcade and Mega Tokyo. So I think that's one of the fan points of view that I don't necessarily know if the majority of comic book fans translate over into webcomic fans. And that's just, you know, once again, one of the things that I've seen in the last couple of weeks is that I think that webcomic fans are almost a different breed of fan.
It's almost like a comic strip, you know, people that read comic strips in the newspaper are more, you know, likely probably to read a webcomic than your average comic book fan, just because it's sort of set up a little better for that type of thing. It's a lot easier to read a horizontal strip of five panels than a, you know, 22 page, you know, full page story on your computer. It's, you know, it's the same old axe, you know, that you have to deal with. But I think that's slowly changing. Steve, did you ever, I mean, when you guys were doing, you know, the webcomic, did you ever face any sort of wall with that type of thing of convincing people that you could read this comic online, that it was the quality that you would see in a published book?
We were the duck-billed platypus because the webcomic people, they really do have their own, I'm talking like they're, you know, some, you know, those people, some M.H. Ross Perot, but, you know, they really do have their own
it's like a culture.
Kind of culture,
yeah.
To where I equate them a lot with manga people, to where
those freaks.
Them.
No, they just kind of grew up not really reading print comics. A lot of them have grown up reading web comics, and some of our print sensibilities. I think adventure comics have a hard time anyway in the web comic world, but I think some of our print comic sensibilities were not to their liking, and I think some of the print people, you know, didn't want to read a comic online. I mean, the most recurring comment from people about web comics was, "Well, I can't read it in the bathroom." And if that's
they don't have laptops.
Well, you know, if that's your whole criteria on comics, then I'm not sure I want to borrow anything from you.
Yeah,
because I don't know where it's been. I don't know, if, you know, what your hygiene habits are. But yeah, it does seem like there is a real disconnect between the print people and the web people.
Did you guys get any backlash whenever you went to a paper comic from any people in the web comic community that said, "Oh, you're selling out. You know, it's what? Why are you doing that? You know, you're abandoning the web comic community."
No, I don't think we were ever part of the webcomic community. I talked with Jerry from Penny Arcade. He's a really nice guy. And, you know, those guys are entrenched in that culture, and I just don't think we were ever part of it. So I don't think we could be sellouts because we were never part of the club. I think we got a bigger backlash when we were nominated for an Eisner, because we weren't an actual, you know, we didn't have our street cred. So
the record would skip when you would walk into the, you know, into the online, the web comic parties.
Here come the Eisner guys, those assholes.
that was us.
And then the manga people are having a party next door. Big eyes.
Big eyes.
Well,
I got dizzy every time I walked into the manga party because all those damn speed lines.
Everyone's so intense.
They were all kung fu fighting.
Nice. Well, I'm gonna read a post from David Price, one of our favorite listeners and sometimes contributors. He says, not all these are updated daily, and I may not stop by every day, but some that I frequent are Girls with Slingshots, which I've read, and that is a really fun strip. Chugworth Academy, which he says is not for kids. User-friendly comic strip, Foxtrot. And then he says any of them at the drop-down menu at comics.com. So those were a couple. We'll just, you know, sprinkle these in. And Sal and I talked about it today. We're going to add in our links category on the website, we're going to add some web comics in. And I've been charged with writing up descriptions and sending him URLs. But if there are any creators out there that do a webcomic, then please send us your information and a link to your webcomic, and we would be more than happy to link it at the site. And Sal, you want to tell them about our new webcomic, actually?
Sure.
This is awesome. We love it.
We actually now have a webcomic on the site, courtesy of one of our listeners, Brian Bowles.
Yeah.
He is a longtime listener and a fan of the show, and he offered to draw a strip comic for us every week, inspired by that show. So he's done the last three episodes. He's done one for each of them, and they're really hilarious. And you can go to aroundcomics.com, click on the episode, and see each episode has its own one there. Or there's also a section on the site under episodes called LOL. It's called the Long Box of Love.
And they're funny.
They are funny. Brian's done a great job on it, and it's really funny stuff, so it's really cool of him to offer to do that for us.
Belly laughs.
Yes. Belly. Big.
Not safe for people allergic to big old belly laughs.
So we are digging on that.
You know, there's something I did want to bring up. I don't know if you guys are familiar with a web comic community called Activate. They're a group of comic creators, and I don't have the information in front of me because I'm terrible at research, but they have done stuff in the regular print comic world, and they decided to get together and create sort of a studio of web comics work. And they created it's like a live journal page. And there's six or eight different strips on there, and just about every week or two they put up new stuff. And there's one in particular, and I wish I could think of the creator's name, but I can't.
I know Dean Haspiel.
That's on there. Yeah, Dean Haspiel, and his comic, his web comic Immortal, is just great stuff. And they're just doing it because they want to, you know, produce work. And like I said, I think most of them on there, in some level or another, are all professionals. Or have been, you know, in the publishing world, but this is just something they've decided to get together and produce web comics for. So, gosh, I'm really unprepared because I wish I could even tell you the URL. I think it's activate.com, but I'm not even sure. We'll link to it on the website.
Well, there are some amazing works that I found this week. Speaking of Brian Bowles a second ago. He says, I have to admit that I don't read many webcomics, even though he's actually doing one now. He says, I did fall in love with Derek Kirk Kim's work through his webcomic, Same Difference. And that's located at lowbright.com. And I took a look at it, and it's just one of these really good slice of life comics. I think he actually releases a panel a day, and it's now like 50 panels wide, and you actually have to scroll, you know, horizontally across the screen, and it builds a panel at a time. And it's basically just a story of a teacher, I think a college teacher, getting up in the morning and going outside and talking to people, and it's just interesting conversation.
Yeah. So does it play to the funky winker bean crowd?
Yes.
The funky winker bean.
I have no idea what he just said, but I said yes because it sounds about right.
It's a printed comic strip.
Well, what I thought, not to go back to something and rehash it too much, but what I wanted to say about that Activate, what I thought was interesting is this is people that are used to working in the print world and crossing over to the webcomic world, which I just find interesting that they'd be wanting to do that. But I think it's just they're wanting to produce work, and they can't always find an avenue for different types of stories or different types of work that they want to do, and they figure, you know, at least get the work out there. And we talked about that before was, you know, I didn't understand a lot of these independent guys that are so afraid of getting their work out there and letting somebody see it. They create a book, and they work on it, and they spend money on publishing it themselves and go to cons, try and sell it. And I think most, you know, for the most of them, their goal is to try and break into the industry with that work. I mean, you get some, you know, publishing something, but why not, you know, why not put something online that you don't have to worry about trying to sell? You're not investing very much money in it, and getting your name out there that way, to me, seems, you know, like Steve's done, where they created a, you know, something that they created a name and a brand that now they're able to go.
Well, even in the previews, Steve, how instrumental has the internet been in keeping, you know, that flame alive for Athena? Because you guys have gone through a hell of a roller coaster ride, and the internet has really been there to help keep that ship afloat.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's when the webcomic was going on, we always were able to send URLs to reviewers. I think we went through practically every reviewer at Sequential Tart for like 2 years there. And, you know, obviously with the whole speakeasy debacle, we were able to, you know, kind of keep it alive just by, you know, posting and saying we're still out here, and, you know, the webcomic is... The strips are still in reruns or whatever.
Speakeasy. I'm not familiar with what happened there.
I think everybody wants to forget that.
You ever think that Speakeasy, that those guys, you know, God bless their souls, that they wish that they had gotten this much publicity before they tanked? Because everyone talks about Speakeasy now.
Well, yeah. I mean, they've kind of replaced CrossGen in our lexicon as, you know, the too much too soon.
It seems like we do at least one news story a week about a book that was at Speakeasy that has been picked up by, you know, either Marcosia or Ape or one of those. And it's just we're constantly saying Speakeasy in our news.
We're always talking about that in the support group.
Do you hold each other and cry?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, it's kind of like, you know, AA buddies or Weight Watchers buddies. You know, we call each other.
My name is Steve Bryant, and I was on Speakeasy.
No, I want to point out one thing when you're talking about creating a brand online, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
To me, one of the interesting phenomena that I don't know that we've seen yet how it's going to play out, but things like Phil Foglio's Girl Genius, Bat and Lash with Supernatural Crime, and Finder from Carlos Steve McNeil have all gone from doing floppies to now publishing online. And I know in the case of Finder that when Carla gets enough for a trade out, that's what she's going to do. So instead of, you know, always printing the 24-page comic and trying to sell those at cons and then trying to sell the trades, trades were more profitable for her. She can, you know, use the floppies as giveaways or whatever, you know, the existing backstock as giveaways at cons, but use her, I don't know if she's putting up a page a week or a month or a day or what, but, you know, that's a way for her to keep generating interest. And when she hits, you know, 80 or 96 or 120 pages, she's going to collect them.
You know,
it's brilliant.
It's interesting to think about that because, you know, we are developing into a wait-for-the-trade consumer market. You know, I do it. Tom does it. I know Sal does it. We don't do it on everything. We don't buy just trades. But there are a lot of titles that it's like, you know, American Virgin, I'm going to wait for the trade on that. Do you see a future point in comics where even Marvel and DC may release monthly titles as web comics and then sell them as trades? I'm not talking next year or 5 years or 10 years, but 15 years down the line, do you see that as maybe a possibility?
Well, I think you've got to consider it as a possibility. I don't know about you guys, but like 5 years ago, I couldn't conceive of a time where I wouldn't be buying CDs. And yet now, for the most part, I mostly just go to the iTunes store and download stuff.
Sure.
And I think as a society, we're getting a lot more used to paying for semi-ephemeral entertainment.
Hey, don't use big words like that. We're not
We
can edit that out.
Hi, I'm Matt Fraction, and this is Around Comics, and it's a podcast that you listen to on your pod, and it's casted to your pod, and you can listen to it, and it's sweet. And I love it, and I love you.
Well, I think it's just a natural progression. I mean, I think, you know, we've seen comics as they are in this format for so long, but at some point there's going to have to be a change because the world around comics are changing, and it's becoming more of an electronic format in every medium. I mean, you see it in films where people don't, you know, the movie industry is hurting to some degree. Theater owners are hurting because more and more people wait for it to come out on DVD. You know, you see it in music, obviously, with iTunes and everybody's iPod. And I think it's just a natural thing. I think the only thing slowing it down is the accessibility of reading it online. A lot of people, myself included, I find it difficult sometimes to read a comic online for whatever reason. It's not, I mean, a lot of times it's just the texture of having it in my hands and holding a comic. But sometimes it's just the actual experience of trying to concentrate on a screen, and there's just something.
I look at a computer screen all damn day.
That's another thing.
Matt Fraction was kind enough to send us a PDF preview of Five Fifths of Science, and Sal and I both agreed. We got a couple pages into it, and we both stopped. And this was, you know, independent of each other. And it's like, you know, I'm gonna wait till I get this before I read it. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad that I did. It's different. I mean, Steve, would you rather have people reading Athena Voltaire on a computer screen or picking up that comic?
Oh, for me, there's no doubt about it. It's picking up the comic. But by the same token, I think you hit upon why adventure content doesn't do quite as well as gag stuff, because it does hurt your eyes after a while. You know, to keep staring at a screen, especially if you know you have a densely plotted,
storyline. I mean, if you something like like your book, it's a serial episode or episodic storyline, and it's something you're going to continue to have to follow along with. And
can't imagine reading like Grant Morrison in a web comic.
three panels a day.
I mean, it's really a testament, you know, to your work that you were, you know, you kind of set yourself up almost to fail. You not only were you taking something and putting it in a different medium, you were taking, you know, a very difficult storyline to try and get people hooked on, and yet you were successful in doing it. So,
well, I think it's funny because when you mentioned earlier that you weren't really part of the webcomic community, I noticed in a lot of the webcomics I looked at that I had a really hard time reading ones that weren't funny. Like, even when I was a kid, I remember when they used to have the Phantom strip in my local paper, mm-hmm. and I never understood who could read it, because, like, it'd be one panel of like someone going, oh, you went into the jungle, and then the next panel.
Well, the Spider-Man strip.
Yeah.
Did everyone here read the Spider-Man comic strip?
I remember seeing it, and I was raised in a time where that sort of storytelling just didn't work, you know? Like, it's not easy for someone who's raised reading things a certain way or watching certain styles of entertainment then to read a three-panel, you know, story, you know, over time, you know, like it's not easy to read the Phantom then.
Well, I mean, do you guys, Steve, are there any, you know, and I mentioned one a couple minutes ago that was a slice of life, and do you guys find that webcomic, that medium really lends itself to humor, the three or five panel or one panel humor strip, and are those the ones that are really the most successful out there?
I think for the most part, yeah, because you've got, you know, PvP and Penny Arcade. And, I mean, those guys were able to make a living off webcomics, which, you know, most people don't. And I think part of it is frequency that they're updated. You do a gag strip every day. Now, granted, you got to think of a joke, every day, but the drawing time, I hope this doesn't sound insulting, but I don't think the drawing time is comparable to what we were spending on a page of the Athena Voltaire stuff.
Well, that, you know, that's certainly true, and that kind of goes back to what I was saying about, you know, it being, you know, there's a flood of I don't want to say bad web comics, but there's just a lot of stuff out there that isn't necessarily developed all that well. The art isn't necessarily good, and that's okay because you're not paying for it.
I tell you, there's some of it that's absolutely gorgeous.
But I'm just saying, but in relationship to what you would see on a comic book stand.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you know, most publishers have a certain status, mm-hmm. you know, in a certain level of, you know, polished work that they're going to only publish to give it the best chance of succeeding. We're on a web, you know, on the web. Like I said, anybody can do a webcomic. Anybody can do a podcast, as you can tell from listening to us. But I think it also works in favor of the medium as a whole. And this is something I think it was Warren Ellis was talking about in one of his, either on his website, was that the web is sort of the new breeding ground for talent because it allows you the ability to experiment without having to invest the money mm-hmm. in printing. I was going to ask you that, Steve. Did you find that it gave you the freedom to try things you maybe wouldn't do if you were paying to have something published as opposed to, you know, publishing a webcomic? Did that give you any freedom to try and experiment and go outside of what you maybe would have done otherwise?
I mean, when we were originally talking about doing, you know, Athena as a comic, originally, my thought was it would be a black and white book. You know, when I was first starting on it, Whiteout had just come out, and I thought, you know, we'll just do color covers and pitch it to Oni, and we'll be all set. And when nobody bid on it, and I saw how Chad Fidler was coloring it, when we made, you know, the move toward the web, we kind of committed to color, which if I were going to self-publish, there's no way I'd do a color book. It's just too damn expensive. So I think right there, the flexibility of the web, yeah, you have no budget in terms of four-color process versus a black and white book.
Well, do you see, you know, I think we've all seen a trend in the last, you know, easily 20 years that independent comics have become really a training ground for mainstream comics, that the mainstream companies are really mining the independent scene for, you know, artists and writers. Do you see webcomics in, and once again, I know that there are people that do webcomics, that's what they want to do, and they bring it to a very high art form, but do you see webcomics as an entry into the independent scene and then maybe into the mainstream, or even webcomics as a jump straight to Marvel or DC or Image?
I'm not really sure if they've been going on long enough to be able to track that kind of thing. I'd like to be mined.
You know? Hollywood, maybe?
Mine away.
Something like that would be great. I don't know that really there have been a lot of people that have done it. I know that is his name Kazoo, the guy that did Copper, which was also nominated for an Eisner. He was the guy behind the Flight anthology. So, you know, it was certainly a jump for him.
We actually had a question on the forum, and I don't have it with me, but the gist of it was Papercut, one of our best posters, and he said something along the lines of, he has figured out your evil plan, that the webcomic was never really your end game, was never to be a mainstream book. You're actually just holding out for the movie deal.
Well, we actually, if you want me to get like totally off topic,
go for it.
We got our first film rights inquiry about 3 years ago.
Wow, that was pre Speakeasy.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, the guy's not at the company anymore.
God, I gotta write a comic book.
Did you listen to last week's episode whenever we were talking about movies?
I did, but I'm coming up at a loss for. Well, I know that Dave Wachter views it as selling out. I'm trying to give him some grief.
If he views anything that isn't like written on the thinnest paper and printed
no,
in just
he
charcoal,
doesn't.
Charcoal, and anything with superheroes. It has to be sad people. Sad people.
He views it as selling out because he hasn't sold out yet, and he'll tell you straight to your face that if somebody throws a pile of money at him,
I'll buy the rights to scar tissue for $50.
Yeah, but
case of beer.
They're throwing options out there towards, pretty much anything and everything. But did you guys feel like the interest that you guys got was a real and valid offer?
It wasn't quite an offer. It was someone that was, okay, here's the whole story. I'm not going to say who it is, but it's...
It was Tom.
It's one of my all-time favorite action movie directors, his production company. And he's no longer, you can figure this out, he's no longer doing concepts that are generated externally. And he's king of the something or other. But anyway,
king of the
is that enough clues? Okay. Anyway,
we're kind of slow, man. I don't know.
What?
It's not in a comic, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I get an email, and the guy, in the subject line says film rights inquiry, and I'm thinking, okay, it's going to be like a student film or something, and so I start reading, and it says, "Dear Steve, my name is blank blank. I'll say who it was. I'm a development executive at James Cameron's Lightstorm Entertainment."
Okay, that's what I was.
Wait, who?
Oh, King of the World. I got it now.
And Athena Voltaire became
Titanic.
I'm
dumb.
At the time we were pitching the book, we were saying it was Indiana Jones starring a James Cameron-style female pilot. So he had, been exposed to the webcomic at one point or another and was asking about the film rights. And obviously nothing came of it, but it was that inquiry that was able to get me representation. So we're repped by Ken Levin, who handled Neil Gaiman in the Todd McFarlane Neil Gaiman suit. So I have no complaints about being on the web because it got us seen by someone and it got us a lawyer that believes in the property.
What? I'm hoping that maybe Around Comics will get optioned for a film version.
Who would play you?
I'm thinking Emmanuel Lewis.
I'm thinking the guy who played Jaws in the Bond movies is still alive.
No, I think he passed away.
I think you need an animatronic monkey.
An animatronic.
All I know is it better be Isai Morales for me, baby. That's all I want.
Whoever is your caller for it can be the guy that did the voice for Charlie from Charlie's Angels.
It was the guy
Bosley.
He'll voice me. He'll voice Matt Fraction. He'll voice Rick Remender.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Who was it was the guy from Dynasty was the voice of Charlie.
JR.
I'm drawing the line. I'm not calling you guys angels.
Oh, we'll be your angels anytime.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, all right. guys, number one, because we really are not experts on webcomics, I do want to read over...
Once again, speak for yourself.
Yeah, you listen here, pal.
I'm an expert on everything.
I want to throw out a couple more. Flint Lockjaw, one of our good buddies, who I think is actually doing a webcomic now.
Flint
is? He's doing it for Kevin Volo at Pixel Strip.
Yeah. That's Steve. I won't even say his last name, even though I think it's out there. But Steve said that Realm of Atland is really good. I checked it out. Very funny, kind of just back medieval times swords and riding around
swords
on horses.
And sorcerers.
I don't know. That doesn't sound very
good. And
Atland is done by Nate Picos, who's the guy that's behind Blambot.
And you say that you're not into webcomics. Good Lord. Listen to you.
He wants to get into the party. They just won't let him in.
He's
an Eisner. No, I really like Nate Picos' work.
See? And it's because of the whole Eisner thing. He thinks that they're all pissed off.
You know who else is doing a webcomic, I think, is our own Dave Wachter, I believe, is working on one with... I don't know. I don't want to say necessarily because they haven't really announced it yet.
Yeah, you're putting it together.
Oh,
yeah,
with
Pat.
With Pat.
Yeah,
Pat
and based on some of Pat's hilarious stories.
Well, one other that I want to say is Butternut Squash. Go to butternutsquash.com. It's awesome. That's one where the art is comparable with anything on the shelves. I really like that. Sal, you got
Apple Geeks.
Is publishing Butternut Squash to bring this all around full circle?
Has it been picked up? Is it being published?
No, it's going to be published in print by none other than
Ape?
DC Comics.
Good for them. the update, the last update on Butternut Squash on the website was that they were taking the rest of the summer off. I think they're going to be up at Mocha tomorrow, which is this weekend. And whenever you listen, it will be the previous weekend. So that is awesome because that is a really good strip. I spent about 20 minutes looking at Butternut today over lunch. So
Butternut.
Yeah.
The one I really like that and was actually one of the first webcomics that I ever read is called Apple Geeks, and it's Apple. I think it's applegeeks.com or applegeeks.net.
And it's gorgeous. It's a gorgeous comic.
It's two guys in college, two college roommates. They started it, and they're like, it's not necessarily any genre. It's just sort of their own stories, but they get into science fiction and superheroes and all the stuff that they like using themselves as the characters, and it is beautiful. Some of the best web art, you know, web comic art that I've seen.
Gorgeous.
The coloring is fantastic, and it's really funny, and I think they are getting published, or they've been working on publishing a book of all their stuff, and it's really good stuff.
Yeah. Like I said a little earlier, we're going to start building some links to some webcomics. It's something that I want to start learning and exploring. You know, this is by no means experts sitting on the panel telling everyone about great webcomics. Our forum did a great job of posting tons of great webcomics. So if you want to find some really cool ones, go to the episode 24 thread at aroundcomics.com's forum, and there's some really good stuff to check out there. That's pretty much all I have. One other thing. I think that you are going to see more and more comic companies using webcomics through their homepages. We did a story a couple weeks ago that Boom is doing Nitroglycerin is their webcomic at their homepage. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to start seeing more of this from especially the smaller independent guys, and it won't take long before Marvel and DC are really jumping on the webcomic tip. So, you guys, some final thoughts. We'll go ahead. Tom, any thoughts on webcomics?
I had not looked at webcomics beforehand, and I looked at about half of the ones online that people had posted, and I found them really interesting because I guess, kind of differing from other opinions, I don't really mind amateurish art because it's free, and sometimes I think it's pretty funny, and I think it's also a pretty liberating thing for the art form that someone can put something out that doesn't have to match like some expectations because no one's paying for it. And most of the comedy ones are funnier than Garfield, which is the standard by which I hold
all humor.
So there weren't three panels in a row of someone watching TV, and then on the last one they said, "I hate Mondays."
But
so,
I love lasagna.
Yeah, true.
Well, so, you are a huge comic fan, yeah, as far as comedy fan, yeah. And I mean, you said before that writing humor is the hardest genre to write, and so you have to really respect a lot of the stuff that you're seeing
to come up with a joke every day.
Yeah,
and you'll fail. I mean, there's ones I read that weren't funny, but to, you know, fit a joke, get a good joke, three, you know, panel joke is probably, you know, it's hard. I wouldn't be able to do it, I don't think.
Oh, yes, you could.
Unless I would have to be swear words or penis jokes. Almost exclusively. That's what the strip will be called.
Swear words
curse
and penis
nuts.
Jokes.
Curse and nuts.
A new band, swear words and penis jokes. We're playing down at Double Door this weekend.
Curse and nuts.
Hey, Steve knows the Double Door. Dude, when are you going to move to Chicago
so
we can
actually
hang?
Actually, I lived there for about 6 or 7 years. My ex-wife got transferred down here with State Farm, so we moved down here. And I'm now divorced, and I can't be away from my kids, so I got to stay down here. Mm. I refuse to be away from him. So.
Well, good man.
I'm stuck in the middle of nowhere.
Well, that's it. But you will come up and visit. Well, I think we're going to talk about that a little bit later in the show. But you got to come up to Chi-Town a little more.
You know, for like $5,000, I got a guy that could take care of that problem for you. You know what I mean?
I'm in.
Pulls out the Berwyn accent. Mr. Salazar, why don't you give us some final thoughts on web comics?
Final thoughts. I think, you know, like I said, I think it there's so much out there, it's hard to get a grasp on, you know, what's good or what's bad. So, you know, like going to forums and word of mouth, and I think that's the only way to really find what, you know, stuff that you might like. But it's also good because it does give the opportunity for anyone that wants to communicate or tell a story or just tell a joke or whatever they want to do, show their art. It's so easy and cheap and, you know, anybody can do it, that, like Tom said, it's liberating for the art form because it allows so much experimentation. And, you know, in standard comics, in paper comics, you're not seeing that much. Even in independent comics, there's a certain formula, and a lot of people are trying to sell stuff or make a name for themselves, and they follow a certain pattern. Mm-hmm. You're not seeing a ton of really experimental stuff or out-of-the-box kind of comics, so it gives that format the ability, you know, to do that and people to try it. So I hope, hopefully, people will take advantage
of it.
It
doesn't have to be, you know, pitched, and no one has to say, yes, you can put this on the web.
Yeah, I mean, just it allows everyone to have their own voice, I mm-hmm. guess.
Yeah, God, if we had had to pitch around comics and
forget
you
it,
oh God, we never would have. Well, Mr. Bryant, as you're our resident web comic expert, we'll call you today. Why don't you throw some final thoughts our way?
I feel like Jerry Springer. Care of yourselves and each other. No, that's the final thought, isn't it? Something you touched on, I think it was Chris, about Marvel and DC utilizing webcomics a bit. I would personally, and this just comes from the background that, you know, I want to work in print, I'd like to see us be able to use them as a better marketing tool than we are. Like right now with, I hate to keep, you know, sounding like I'm plugging Athena Voltaire, but with ours, there's a syndication feature because we're part of something called Webcomics Nation, which is a programming thing done by the publisher of Modern Tales, where you can syndicate the feature and it'll show up and automatically update on whatever site you're on. First of all, I think that's a great marketing tool. And I think about, you know, if people can circulate the frickin' Numa Numa dance, a great untapped target for comics is the civilians who are bored in their offices. You may not be able to get a guy to go to a comic shop, or you may not be able to get him to buy a copy of Kingdom Come, no matter how well painted it is, because it has somebody in superhero outfit. He may not buy it in Barnes and Noble, but you know, if people will watch. You know, all kinds of stupid stuff on the internet to avoid working, I think that's a great target. You know, you find somebody that liked X3, it'd be cool if Marvel had, you know, a weekly updated page-by-page-by-page comic on the X3 site. And at the bottom of it is a comic shop locator number. You know, stuff like that, mm-hmm. where if you can use webcomics to teach, you know, the civilians how to read a comic, I think that would be a great thing. You know, our strip, if you know somebody that likes the Indiana Jones stuff, send them a link. Gary Schalliner, who did John Law, you know, if you know somebody that really likes noir stuff, send them a link. And just kind of use webcomics to work virally to infect the general populace and just get them used to the language of comics and eventually get them in the doors of a shop.
Yeah, you're right, because people will do anything to avoid working, and
it's
perfect.
Yeah, I mean, my God, I'm just permanently logged into the Comic Geek Speak Around Comics message boards, and I'll even if I'm not posting, I'll check them throughout the day because my job sucks so bad, you know, I check Newsarama and all that stuff regularly, and I think if you could find a way to introduce people that aren't into comics to the medium with, you know, linkage like that, it's total guerrilla marketing, but why the hell not, you know?
Absolutely, and I'll move on to my, you know, quick final thoughts here. I see two very different cultures. I see the mainstream comic book industry and readers, and I say mainstream is probably not accurate. The traditional comic fans are using, you know, web comics to further their products, but then I also see a totally different culture, and that is a web comic culture. And I think that, you know, they will be independent of each other, but I think that they're both very cool, and anything that moves forward the sequential art form, I think, is a good thing. And I see web comics as another arm on that tree of sequential art. And I'm really looking forward to learning about it and finding some neat stuff. I'm going to add some to my daily list of bookmarks that I check on my browser whenever I get up in the morning. So I'll update everyone on stuff that I find. I've found some neat stuff in the last couple weeks, and I'm really looking forward to using webcomics to learn more about this medium that I love. So that's my final thoughts. Would like to thank Steve for being here on the panel to help us walk through the very beginning of the path of webcomics. I'm going to warn everyone on our news today, it is like 10 minutes long, and it is a Wizard World Philadelphia wrap up. We have a bunch of other news stories that we'll catch up on next week. But there was so much stuff that came out of Wizard World Philadelphia. I started reading the recaps on Around Comics and the stories that Sal put up, and like each little snippet was its own huge story. So we've got seriously like 10 minutes, like 5 minutes each of Marvel and DC. So our news this week is going to be very big two oriented, and it's going to be pretty much all of the major announcements at Wizard World Philadelphia. And we'll be back right after we play this to talk about them. But man, that for not a huge show, there were tons of stories that came out of that. So anyway, we're going to move over to the news desk. We're going to play our Wire to Wire comic news, and we will be right back to talk about it.
These are your top headlines for the week of June 5th, 2006. Now for a wrap-up of the top headlines from Wizard World Philadelphia. Starting off with the House of Ideas. Artist David Finch and writer Charlie Houston are planning to stay on Moon Knight for at least 12 issues, and Marvel will do what they can to keep Finch and Christos Gage on the book as long as possible. Also announced was a new Son of Satan book from Alexander Irvine and Russell Braun. Zombie, a new book from Marvel Max by Mike Raicht and Kyle Holtz, was described by Mike as a bank robbery gone as wrong as it possibly can. The book is unrelated to the hit Marvel Zombies, although a sequel to that book is also in the works. Beyond, a miniseries by Dwayne McDuffie that looks suspiciously similar to Marvel's Secret Wars, the Marvel heroes find themselves in space, and who will make it back? A Black Cat and Wolverine team-up named Claws by Jimmy Palmiotti, Justin Gray, and Joseph Michael Listner has also been announced. Springing from a guest shot in Captain America, Union Jack will be appearing in his own limited series. Be on the lookout for a giant-sized Hulk one-shot from Peter David and Greg Pak. As has become the norm for Marvel Giant Size book, this one will include reprint material, in this case, a classic Peter David Hulk story. As was the case last year, there will be Ultimate Annuals again. Ultimate Fantastic Four Annual will feature the return of Mole Man. Ultimate Spider-Man Annual will feature Daredevil, Punisher, and other Ultimate characters. And Ultimates Annual will be a Captain America and Falcon story. There are no current plans for an Ultimate version of Bishop. However, Ultimate Cable will appear in Ultimate X-Men number 75. There are also no more ongoing Ultimate series planned, although the limited series will keep on coming. Just in time for the television series, there's a new Blade series by Mark Guggenheim. We'll see the Inhumans next in New Avengers during Civil War. This will lead into more Inhuman involvement in the Marvel Universe. According to Tom Brevoort, the Cold War with the Inhumans, it's going to get a little hotter. The newly announced Ghost Rider series will feature the Johnny Blaze version of Ghost Rider. We'll see more Thor sooner than later. Fantastic Four number 538 is going to be a good place to look. Look for Ronan to play a bigger part in New Avengers number 26 and the post-Civil War Avengers. In regards to Astonishing X-Men, Joe Quesada said that the Joss Whedon-John Cassaday series will continue to walk between the raindrops of what's going to be going on in the larger Marvel Universe. The series is in continuity, Quesada reiterated, but as he sees it, it stands on its own, virtually its own little X-Men movie. Asked about the Ultimate Iron Man 2, Joe Quesada said that it is still in the works and believes that writer Orson Scott Card has completed 2 issues of the 5-issue miniseries. Marvel is waiting for Card's schedule to clear a little so he can complete the remaining 3 issues. Cable Deadpool will continue as a series, despite the fact that Cable will now be joining one of the core X-Men teams. Greg Land has been named as the artist on the October launch of Ultimate Power miniseries that has the Ultimate Universe meeting the world of J. Michael Straczynski's Supreme Power. Joe Quesada confirmed that artist Ed McGuinness is now exclusive with Marvel, and he is working with Jeff Loeb on a project that will be announced shortly. The Doctor Strange miniseries by Brian K. Vaughan and Marcus Martin will launch in October. Speaking in regards to large crossover events, Joe Quesada reiterated that following Civil War, there won't be any large-scale, line-wide crossovers on the same scale of what fans are seeing currently for a year or perhaps longer. Crossovers will still happen, Quesada said, but there will be smaller in scale with family lines or slightly larger, but will not be universe-wide. Now here are some of the top DC stories and announcements from Wizard World Philadelphia. Dan DiDio announced that Manhunter has been given a 5-issue reprieve and will end at issue number 30 instead of 25. In talking about the new Batwoman, DiDio said that for now, DC is working to make her a supporting member of the Bat family, but if fans want to see her in her own series or miniseries, they'll make that happen. A new 8-issue miniseries called Mystery in Space is set to hit shelves this September. The series is written by Jim Starlin with art by Shane Davis with a variant cover by Neil Adams. The series will feature the new Captain Comet with a backup story of The Weird featuring art by Starlin and Al Milgrom. While Dan DiDio would not comment on who the next Flash is, or many other details of the new Flash series, he did mention that we will be seeing what happened to Superboy Prime while he was trapped in the Speed Force. Asked if the Question will be getting his own series, writer Jeff Johns replied that he's in 52 at least twice a month. 52 has been written up to the issue of number 26, the halfway point of the series. He also confirmed that he will be returning to write JSA sometime next year. Although there will be a Titans East springing from the upcoming events in Teen Titans, he did not know whether they would be getting their own book. Wendy and Marvin will continue to appear sporadically in Teen Titans. Asked when Green Arrow would have a regular artist, DiDio confirmed that Scott McDaniel was on board for the long haul. Coming in August will be the new Justice League of America book by Brad Meltzer. Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman are the only announced members of the new team, and the first few issues will be a recruitment drive. JSA will be relaunched in October, written by Jeff Johns with Alex Ross consulting. New characters will be introduced. Wonder Woman is also being relaunched, written by Alan Heinberg with art by Terry and Rachel Dodson. The new Flash book will be written by Paul DeMeo and Tanny Bilson, who were previously involved with the Flash TV series, and it will be drawn by Ken Lashley, but we do not know who the Flash will be. Dan DiDio offered one statement: Barry Allen is not coming back. Move on. The Green Lantern Corps miniseries will be followed later this month by an ongoing series by Dave Gibbons, with art by Patrick Gleason and Prentice Rollins. Readers can sample 6 upcoming new books in the low-priced 80-page special Brave New World. The book will feature the new Atom, Martian Manhunter, OMAC, Uncle Sam and the Freedom Fighters, and The Trials of Shazam. The books themselves all debut in July and August. The Atom will be a new character. The Martian Manhunter will be a changed character, as he will discover he may not be the last surviving Martian. Supergirl will continue to be a part of the Legion of Superheroes as long as sales warrant. Matt Wagner will follow his ultra-successful Batman and the Monster Men with another riff on an early Batman tale in Batman and the Mad Monk. Batman and Son by Grant Morrison and Andy Kubert spins out of the events in Batman, Son of the Demon, which not coincidentally will be reprinted. The story begins in Batman number 656 on sale in September. Brian K. Vaughan will pen Pride of Baghdad, a story about a family of lions that escaped from the Baghdad Zoo during the U.S.-led invasion, and it is due out in September. Regular DMZ artist Riccardo Buccelli is slowed down on the series recently due to an eye condition. As a result, series creator and writer Brian Wood will step in to draw an issue of the series, which will serve as a guide to DMZ. Following that, Wood's supermarket collaborator Christian Donaldson will join him on the series for an arc, which will most likely be followed by Buccelli's return to the series. In speaking on 100 Bullets and Why the Last Man, it was explained that the two series are planned to end with issues number 100 and number 60, respectively. Neither end number is set in stone, but both creators have previously expressed that that's where they plan to wrap up their acclaimed series. These have been your top stories for the week of June 5th, 2006. For the full version of these and other stories, please visit www.aroundcomics.com, your source for the best in comics news, reviews, and opinions.
And those are your top headlines from Wizard World Philadelphia. We're going to start with Marvel. We're going to go back up to the top. This had already been reported that David Finch and Charlie Houston are going to stay on for 12 issues of Moon Knight. So everyone happy about that?
If you like it, it's awesome. I'm not that. That sounded like I didn't like it.
There's been people complaining about it to some degree. The different complaints. I've liked it. The only complaint I have about it is, and I'm a big fan of Finch's art, but this stuff, it just seems like he's really going over the top with it, and it's bringing back sort of a Spawn-ish, vibe where it's just so over-rendered to some degree.
Oh, I think it's great.
It still looks good, but it's just like sometimes it's a little
too
much. I mean, it's just like a little too much to handle. But
you're going to end up with free Moon Knight pogs.
Maybe, I don't know.
That's a joke for the people in the store.
Yeah, but I like the book. I mean, I love the character Moon Knight, and I think, people have been complaining because the story's sort of, it's decompressed, and they don't know what's going on.
It's called nuanced, losers.
Well, it's like you need everything spelled out for you, and you can't have, it's like, just read it. I mean, do you have to know every single thing that's going on?
It's going to unfold nicely.
Right.
Steve, have you been reading Moon Knight?
I haven't been picking them up, but I mean that's the thing with I hate it when people throw out the word decompress. You just take a different approach, and if it's going to be unfolding over a period of time, great. Let's keep them on there as long as you can. Let them tell the story they have to tell.
I'm going to jump over new Son of Satan book is coming out, and this is I think just in time they're doing a. I listened to Collected Comics Library. Two episodes ago, and they're coming out with a Son of Satan Essentials.
It's a different name, right?
I forget the name of it. Listen to Chris Marshall's podcast, Collected Comics Library, and he talks about it and all the issues. But it's like Tales of Horror or some.
It's very scary.
Well, they didn't want to put Son of Satan on a book, but they're coming out with a new Son of Satan book.
Son of Satan.
And this one is done by Alexander Irvine and Russell Braun, who I
don't know.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with them at all. Anybody?
Good luck.
Anybody know their?
Good luck.
Good luck to you two, gentlemen. All
right. There's a new zombie book coming. Have we reached the zombie
saturation?
Yeah. It,
point of no return. God. No, maximum. What do you call it?
I'm waiting for like zombie vampires. You know, it's just undead comic books.
It's like to the point where even if it's good, I don't even want to look at it because there's so many of them. It's like you just get a saturation.
When is Althina Voltaire gonna have zombies?
Zombie, yeah.
Do skeleton warriors like Harryhausen looking ones count?
Those are cool, so that's all right.
Okay.
Zombie Nazis.
Jesus, the ultimate zombie. Versus...
God. Well, send all your Christian reply.
I went to Catholic school for a long time. I can call
you have a lot of anger.
Zombie, yeah.
Well, Steve, I did pick up an Ape Entertainment book this week, the Undead Task Force UTF. That's an undead book.
Yeah, that's got your zombies right there.
Yeah, so I'm getting through it. I read the first half of it a couple nights ago. I'm going to read the second half.
I personally can't get enough of zombies. I love zombies. I've always loved zombie movies. More zombies, the better. You know, my dream someday is that actual zombies will rise from the grave.
You got your kids
and
already.
And I'm set, man. I'm ready to go. I got a plan.
Do you have the zombie survival guide book?
No, I don't need it. I could have written that book. Are you kidding me? I know what to do with
your
zombies.
Kids already. Like,
I got
time's
guns
come.
And
time to
ammo. And...
Get to the car.
Get the machete
Get
and
the
baseball bat.
Time to go.
Hey.
Oh, admit it. You just repackaged your Y2K survival kit.
Well, I had to do something with it. I mean, I had that water and canned beans. I mean,
duct tape. For
duct tape. Flashlights.
Beyond, a miniseries from Dwayne McDuffie. I love in the release, it says, looks suspiciously similar to Marvel Secret Wars. Apparently, a bunch of Marvel heroes get kidnapped into space, and it's all about who will make it back. Even though, I think from the preview page, I saw Gravity is in this.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Good for Mike Norton. As a co-creator, I don't know if he's going to be involved in it.
I don't think he's involved with it.
But he finally gets to see what it's like to have somebody take your creation and tear it to pieces.
maybe Gravity will get killed by a guy with a mullet. Beyonder.
But, hey, anytime Dwayne McDuffie does comics, though, that's a sign for celebration.
Yeah, the art I saw on it was really nice. So.
What was the last thing that he's done?
I don't know. I know that he wasn't writing on Static Shock?
Yeah.
And he was writing on Teen Titans, and I know he was the showrunner for the last season of JLU, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. But it's been, I mean, he has not been very prominent. So, yeah, you're all right. It is good to see him get involved.
Well, everyone sharpen your claws because Black Cat and Wolverine are teaming up for a miniseries. That's I see Tom is just shaking with anticipation.
Yeah,
over here.
Wolverine. not enough Wolverine.
Yeah, I wonder if Kevin Smith is going to write it, and it will come out 4 issues over three and a half years.
Leave Kevin Smith alone. He's a filmmaker. He was doing us all a favor by writing comics.
Sal is going to dig this. Springing from a guest shot in Captain America, Union Jack is getting his own miniseries.
Blimey! I love that, man.
Run by Mike Perkins. Mike Perkins, the guy that's alternating arcs with Steve Epting and Cap.
Yeah, and he does. You know, when
like
he was doing
stuff.
This stuff in Cap, it you know, as much as I like Epting and what he's done on that book, I mean, you didn't miss a beat with Perkins.
That whole series
in.
Has just kicked ass from beginning to now.
Perkins is fantastic. He was inking Butch Geist on Ruse, and then he was penciling Kiss Kiss Bang Bang out of Crossjet before they faded. So yeah, he's terrific.
Next story, there's going to be a giant sized Hulk one shot with Peter David and Greg Pak, and with these giant sized books that they're doing, are they basically reprints, because that's what I'm getting out
there's
of
there's like a ton of I saw people complain about the was it the
Ms. Marvel
one where people I don't really know if like the preview was misleading, but I know people were kind of taken aback by how much reprint material was in there.
There's a lot of reprint material on those.
Yeah, and it's a little disappointing because they did such a nice job. Marvel did a nice job on like the Ultimate Annual stuff,
mm-hmm.
and like Cap 65th Anniversary stuff.
Yeah,
and, you know, those were really nice books. You know, extra stuff that wasn't there was maybe a little bit of reprint stuff in there, but you had some really good original material.
The giant size really kind of feel like shelf filler.
Well, I mean, you saw it a lot in years past that anytime I never even bought an annual because I knew it was nothing but garbage most of the time, you know.
That's what killed the annuals. But yeah. But the next story is something that's brought annuals back, and this has been a great year for annuals.
Yeah.
And they did announce that the Ultimate lines are going to have annuals. Fantastic Four, Ultimate Spider-Man, and the Ultimates are all going to have annuals coming
that's
out
cool.
again. And I really, really enjoyed the Ultimate annuals from last year.
They're good.
Although you could say that everything Ultimate is a reprint to some degree.
Not always.
Oh, that one's for you Ultimate haters.
Okay.
Blah, blah, blah.
And another Ultimate story is that they have no current plans for an Ultimate version of Bishop, which just really...
Are people clamoring for Ultimate Bishop?
I'm sure there were.
Someone.
But Tom, they are going to have Ultimate Cable.
Yes.
Thank goodness.
Will they have time to introduce the Ultimate New Mutants so that when Cable comes along and ruins it, that it'll have some meaning for the people? Sorry about that, all you Cable lovers.
Is Mike Norton going to get paid if we get Ultimate Gravity?
No, of course he won't. And
I don't know. What's his deal? Does he own that character?
I don't know.
I always see him credited as a co-creator of Gravity. So, you know, I really hope so. If he doesn't, we'll have him up to the shop and buy him a beer because he's a fellow Chicagoan. So,
we're not too far away from Ultimate Gravity, though. What, a year, 2 years?
I could see it any time.
Any time, any moment. There'll be a woman, though. Lesbian.
Good God.
An Asian lesbian, woman. Yeah.
Quadriplegic.
Stop reading my pitch, Tom.
Next week it'll come out.
Just in time for the television series, there's a new Blade series written by Mark Guggenheim, and I would have no idea who Mark Guggenheim is except. He is
for that museum of his.
No.
Oh.
He's writing. That's who's writing Wolverine with Ramos. And
yes.
I tell you what, that Wolverine
Umberto.
Is so good. So this Guggenheim guy.
Don't get out of control. It's only been one issue. It's got plenty of time
excited.
To fail.
It's
going to
be miserably. Has anybody seen the previews for the Blade TV show?
Yeah. With Sticky Fingers.
Steve, have you seen that?
I saw the trailer on the Marvel contest thing.
It actually looks pretty good.
I thought
the Blade stuff always has been surprisingly good. You
didn't
like
see Blade 3, did you?
Blade 3 was not
good. Oh, God, that
was
bad.
But the first two were really, like...
First two were good. The
pretty
first
good.
One especially was
good.
Yeah.
Oh, I love the second one.
Good.
I love the second one.
The second one was pretty good.
Yeah. We moving on here. The Inhumans are getting ready to play a much bigger role in the Marvel Universe. And this is coming out of, I believe, the pages of Son of M. And Black Bolt is pissed. And the Inhumans are going to be cropping up in New Avengers and some Civil War tie-ins.
You can tell Black Bolt's pissed from his...
menacing
brow.
Glare.
He doesn't, you know.
I mean, Inhumans, maybe some of the coolest underused characters in Marvel the last 15 years.
They're hard to use, though. They're hard to, you know, I mean...
I think what it requires, it requires a certain quality that I think from time to time... I know they used to appear a lot more in the Fantastic Four, and I think they've always suffered from the fact that some of the same thing the Fantastic Four suffers for is you need someone with a really big sense of imagination to use those characters in a really... You gotta have sort of like a fearlessness to like throw them in, because they're kind of weird. They live on the blue area of the moon, or they lived in the mountains in a big dome, you know? Like, it required sort of like you just had to toss them in there and let it go, and I think... The same thing the Fantastic Four suffered from.
I think part of the problem, too, is that, and not to use a pun, but they're, you know, they are, you have a hard time relating to those characters. Because
they're
inhuman. Well, yeah, I don't mean it that, I mean, I don't,
yeah,
honestly,
I was
seriously, though, it's, you know, it's like, because, you know, it's sort of like the problem I always had with Thor once he was no longer
Donald Blake.
Donald Blake, because he was a god, and I had no way to relate to that character any longer.
That was disappointed me.
I mean, you had,
that was when I started relating to him.
Oh,
I have a very strong self-image.
Apparently.
You're just staring in the mirror talking on the phone, like flexing.
It's just your flowing blonde locks that does it.
Ghost Rider is coming back, and it's going to be the Johnny Blaze. So Johnny Blaze fans rejoice. We just talked about Thor. Fantastic Four 538. Check it out. Looks like our favorite Asgardian is coming back. So.
And maybe Donald Blake.
And there is, look for Donald Blake to maybe be involved with that.
For all you Donald Blake fans.
Yeah. Yes. Hey, he's my favorite limping doctor.
Uh-huh. Everyone's least favorite hero, I think, from Ronan. My opinion, one of the worst reveals of a character ever.
It was a chick in a guy suit.
Yeah, did you see
better
the...
that way than the other way around?
true. The from one panel to the next loses 40 pounds of muscle and then is just a very slim
woman. It went to her boobs.
Yeah, apparently.
Hello.
I'm still pissed about that.
It's a comic book, dude. Relax.
Yeah, I know.
Or son of a.
fanboy.
I hate all comics.
Let me see.
Destroy
here.
All comics.
Cable Deadpool is going to continue, but Cable is going to be coming to one of the core X teams. So Tom cringes.
Sorry, Cable lovers.
Okay, here's something that's cool. Ed McGuinness has been signed to an exclusive
that's
with
cool.
Marvel,
Ed
and McGinnis. He's going to be working with Jeff
Loeb.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Doctor Strange miniseries by Brian K. Vaughan.
That could be cool.
Interesting.
Steve's like, I'm sold. I'm there.
Yeah. Well, Vaughn, pretty much anything he does. I mean.
All right. I'm going to throw one out there for Steve. What would you think about Mike Mignola doing a Doctor Strange?
I would buy Mike Mignola illustrating the phone book.
Oh, but come on. Doc Strange, wouldn't that just be the perfect marriage in the Marvel Universe?
See, I'm so torn because on the one level, I would love to see that. But on the other level, I don't want to see him doing anything but Hellboy and Screw on Head.
Yeah.
And Lobster Johnson. You know, just give me those. So, yeah, I'd love to see him do Doc Strange, but...
I'm with you, dude. I want more Lobster Johnson. You know. All right. Enough
all
of that. What's next? Green Arrow.
No.
Oh.
Green Arrow signed an exclusive to Marvel. Hawkeye pissed.
That's what I want to see happen with that whole Superboy story. Is that you know the daughter or granddaughter or whoever's fighting for the rights?
Jerry Siegel,
she sells it to Marvel. Would that be like the hugest story in comics? It's like
Superboy comes to Marvel.
Yeah, blow everyone's mind.
That would you would have oh god the internet would crack in half
literally. Manhunter has been given a 5-issue reprieve. It will go to issue number 30 instead of 25. That is a series that I have not read that keeps getting suggested to me. So I am guilty of
apathy.
Yeah, pretty much. But I hear it's really good.
Yeah, it's kind of cool that it's gotten an extra 5 issues. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't often.
It'll be like Spider-Girl. It'll end up at like issue 100.
You're at issue 100.
Yeah. Okay, this is a story that we actually cut for time's sake out of the main story, and that is the new Batwoman. And DC is really pretty in your face about getting diverse. They're adding more ethnicities.
Baloney.
Oh, come on.
They're not doing this to be diverse. They're doing it.
Bull crap.
Oh, come on. You see that first cover page? It's just a giant ass shot of Batwoman.
No, I'm not talking about just Batwoman. You have to look at Blue Beetle is a young Mexican kid. They've got this the Chinese
team that Grant Morrison made that looks amazing just based on their names alone. I can't remember any of the names. There's a thing on Newsarama. I was looking at it, and I was like, yeah, this is Grant Morrison obviously invented the...
Firestorm. I mean, it's I'm all for diversity in comics, but it is so plain that DC's like, well, I think that we need a young Asian hero. You know, we don't have enough lesbians. What's oh, Batwoman. What's bringing her?
I just think it all depends on how you do it, and I just think that they've, you know.
I just think it's.
I mean, I don't know how you do it right exactly. How do you introduce a, you know, a gay character? And I don't know.
Gradually,
is there, well, I think, but it's just like that first cover I see, and it's just, you know, her in black, you know, leather with her ass hanging out, and it's just like,
see,
okay, that's not gonna piss off too many people.
I am so offended by the thought that anyone would ever use sex to sell comic books. It just shocks me that.
Well, no, I'm not offended by it at all. No, it's just sort of blatant, you know.
Yeah. But it is what it is. I mean,
Steve, is Athena straight, though, right?
Right.
Okay, just checking.
So, the whole Batwoman thing, my perspective was, when they were announced in 52, they said that they were going to introduce a new costumed lesbian character. And when they announced that, my whole fear was that they were going to turn Montoya into a costume.
Yeah,
show, I just,
that's right.
I was terrified at that thought because the character is perfect the way she's been done.
That was like the big thing on the internet where everyone thought that was what was going to happen, is they were going to turn Montoya into it.
Well, you
like
think maybe, yeah. Do you think maybe yeah, they,
I mean,
they
here,
were going?
I'm thrilled because they're not going to muck around with a character.
Yeah, I just won't read Batwoman.
there you've got your Hispanic lesbian female. So.
Yeah. The Flash is coming back. Come on.
Yeah.
Okay, I was waiting for it.
I can't wait.
Well, it's about time. He's pretty friggin' slow.
Oh my God.
Come on, hurry up, Flash.
I just hope they don't screw it up.
They actually had.
Did we ever figure out who it is?
No, but this is funny. They first of all, we will be finding out a little bit more about what happened to Superboy Prime while he was trapped into.
He's going to Marvel.
Why he was trapped in the Speed Force, and then Dan DiDio had a comment of the new Flash book will be written by Paul DiMeo and Danny Bilson. Those are the guys who did the Flash TV series. When asked who the Flash will be, DiDio offered one statement. Barry Allen is not coming back. Move on.
Well, forget it.
Yeah.
Then I'm not buying.
Thank you. So, no. I hope it's Bart, kind of.
I do. You know, I do, too. I think it would
be
fitting.
What if it's somebody completely new?
What if it's Zoom? No, I just said
no,
that. Someone said that. That would be garbage. You can't do that.
Yeah.
I think Bart is the perfect one. You've passed the torch now twice, you know, from Barry to Wally and now to Bart, and you can explore that character, which I think would be nice.
I think you should be a lesbian. Whoever it
no,
is.
No! The
lesbian.
Flash is a straight white male. Just like me.
No. We just talked about the question, and it does not appear that there are any plans to bring him into his own series. And Geoff Johns basically said, hey, he's in like 26 issues of 52, so just enjoy that. The Green Arrow Green Arrow finally is going to have a regular artist. How long has Phil Hester been off of Green Arrow?
For a while now. A
couple years now,
really?
I think, yeah.
No,
that just ended, didn't it?
Yeah.
Right before, he had a couple issues after he left. That was, he had already penciled.
Yeah.
Didn't he?
But I don't mind.
I don't remember.
Steve, are you a Phil Hester fan?
Oh, yeah. I haven't followed a lot of the stuff he's drawn, but, The Coffin is still one of my all-time favorites.
Love that book.
You know, trade.
Love that book, and I keep promising Sal that I'm gonna let him borrow it. So I think I'm just gonna have to freaking buy him his own copy and send it to him.
You know what you should pick up if I just read the new issue of Negative Burn,
mm-hmm.
and he does a story in that he drew it and wrote it, and it's. His art is completely different in it. I mean, it's nothing that you would recognize as Phil Hester's. It was interesting to see him, you know, depart from what he's been doing for all these years and do something completely different.
And Sal and I have experienced it firsthand. Once again, not a nicer guy you would ever want to meet. Phil is...
Except Tom.
Except for
Tom's
Tom.
A nicer guy. But
or Steve.
I'll help you. I'll help you carry, if you're carrying something heavy... I'll help you carry it wherever you're going.
Phil might not. He's, you know.
Yeah.
Phil was such a nice guy.
No, he was a great guy.
JLA is coming back. Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman are going to be in it. And the rest of the team is undetermined as of this point.
Whoever. It'll be good.
Flash.
JSA.
Green Lantern.
JSA is... coming back
this
with
is the interesting
Geoff Johns.
Part of the mm-hmm. Geoff Johns with Alex Ross Consulting. What does that mean?
Yeah.
You're a painter.
Yeah, I don't know what
that
means.
What does that mean? I don't get
consulting. Steve, can I consult on your next issue of Athena Voltaire?
Oh, sure.
Okay. I got some advice. Monkeys.
Monkeys, yes.
Yeah. Zombie Nazis.
Big robotic monkeys.
Lesbian vampire killers.
Hispanic.
Lesbian monkeys who are Asian.
So
New World
monkeys. You were almost describing Hellboy, because you had zombies, you had monkeys, you had Nazis, in other words that end with E's.
Anything Jeez. E or EY. The Green Lantern Corps. It's a miniseries followed later by an ongoing series by Dave Gibbons. Tom, you're a big Dave Gibbons fan, aren't you?
Yeah, I liked him, except for Rand Thanagar War was really boring. But no, I like him, and I think it's going to be cool of his the stuff since One Year Later with the Green Lantern Corps has been pretty interesting. So, you know, you got any time you get to see Guy Gardner, who I used to just hate. I used to just think, God, why do they have a guy who's a dick? And as I got older, I appreciate the fact that they have one guy.
Yeah, you're glad they have a guy that's
an
asshole.
And it makes total sense where there's one guy who's just an ass.
Well, you said this, I think, 2 weeks ago. You were talking about that book and how it was really interesting, the interaction between him and Hal.
Yeah.
And how, as much of a dick as Guy is, he still had, he was like the first guy to really support Hal when he came back, and well, I think Hal.
They've sort of changed him from, he's like that asshole friend you have who's just, he's just an ass, but like he'd also be like,
right, he'd take a bat to the head for you, you know.
I know someone like that, who's the producer of the show.
He's the Guy Gardner dude. Does that make me Kilowog?
I'm the Guy Gardner of Orion.
No, you're one
comics.
Of the little blue guys.
I'm an Owen.
Here's something that's pretty cool. Is this 80-page special? It looks like DC is going to give folks a chance to try out a bunch of the new series by putting them in an 80-page sampler.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's going to be a Brave New World, Adam, the new Martian Manhunter, OMAC, Uncle Sam and the Freedom Fighters, and Trials of Shazam. Yeah. So is it true Uncle Sam didn't die in the first issue of Infinite Crisis?
Face down in a pool of oil?
Yeah.
Take that.
He's with Speedball.
But did you guys hear who was supposed to die in Infinite Crisis?
Nightwing.
What do you think about that?
They should have.
Why not?
They wussed out.
Yeah.
Steve, did you hear that? That they were actually, it was in their plan the entire time to actually kill off Nightwing?
And see, I can't even imagine them having the balls to do that. But
they didn't.
I wonder whose idea, well, I'd be really interested to see idea it was to do
Grant
it.
Morrison?
And whose idea, I would be really interested to see who it was that
stopped
like, at
it.
The end
yeah,
said,
no,
you can't do this. You know, like, or what it was, or how it
Jeff
ended
Johns.
Up being that way.
I don't know.
It would be bad. It would be bad if they killed Nightwing.
They should have killed off Bruce Wayne and made Nightwing the new.
Wow.
Oh, sorry.
Man.
Wow.
I'm not saying that's necessary.
Don't ever
idea,
make Sal your EIC.
Would,
he'll walk in.
Everyone.
Yeah, Sal's first day on
Wipe
the job.
Them
kill them all.
Well, I mean,
no, my
like,
first act is Lord and Emperor of all comics is to kill off Aunt May. She's
finally
dead.
Bullet to the back of the head. No,
she just falls down and like brain aneurysm. I don't know.
That 40 years postponed heart attack. Of
kill him off.
Oh,
come on.
Peter finds Aunt May tied up with a ball gag in her mouth.
Yeah.
Oh,
self asphyxiation.
Strange that went horribly, horribly wrong.
Alfred
is
a suspect in her.
It would be Jarvis.
Or Jarvis, I'm sorry.
We have to say
Jarvis.
Something to entice the 12-year-olds to
yeah,
keep down.
Yeah.
No, you want it.
So it's Our Gang / Fiction 3 weeks ago, and now it's Aunt May with a ball gag.
I just kill them all.
I see, that's the fallout from Identity Crisis. We're just trying to top it, you know?
Just trying to top murdering.
But yeah, killing Nightwing, that would have been huge. And
it would have been a hell of a lot better than killing
Superboy?
Yeah, whatever his name
which
is.
Which was
Well, see, the weird
Connor.
Thing is, the whole series, you can see the moment when he would have died.
Yeah,
you know,
and
like,
he was supposed to.
And then it was like, hey.
He's alive.
Well, I mean, they talked about how rushed that series, last two issues were. Yeah. I think they had that stuff penciled. I think they had it ready to go.
It looks like he died.
And so someone like had like a strong cup of coffee and said, oh my God, what are we doing?
Ooh,
no.
Someone woke up and was like, What?
Call no. Perez. We have to redo
Bruce
it.
Bruce Jones slipped someone a Mickey and said, I'm riding Nightwing 1 year later already. You can't kill him.
Supergirl will continue to be in the Legion of Superheroes.
That was an amazing, you know, I met Bruce Jones last year at a Wizard World. I gotta say, that was an amazing impersonation. He sounds just like that.
He's
just
like he's on lewds.
Yeah.
Hey, you can't, this is Bruce Jones. No, I can't.
All right. So,
you lost the match.
Supergirl is gonna be Legion of Superheroes as long as people buy it. So,
sweet. Buy Legion of Superheroes. It's a great book. I love it.
Well, that'll make our buddy Vince B very happy because that's one of his all-time favorites. Matt Wagner. This will make David Price happy. Matt Wagner is going to have a follow-up to Batman and the Monster Men called Batman and the Mad Monk. So
nice. It's all going to be M's. Monster Men, Mad Monk, Mickey Mouse. I think he's doing Batman and Mickey Mouse.
Monsieur Mala.
Monster Maya versus Monster Mala.
More Batman news. Batman and Son by Grant Morrison and Andy Kubert.
Buying Batman.
Hey, I got to tell you, I saw some preview. I don't know. Oh, God. They've been out there a little while now, but some of the best Kubert stuff I've ever seen him do.
Steve, have you seen those preview pages?
No, I haven't.
Absolutely freaking blow your mind amazing. And that is not hyperbole. That is not me building up something that's really not that. I mean, this stuff is freaking amazing.
Yeah, it was great. And with Morrison writing it.
Best Joker I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Morrison wrote a great Joker.
Oh.
Yeah.
Go check out the preview pages. I'm sure we still have them at Around Comics.
Well, no, they weren't officially released. Somebody on another message board, like, scanned them in from. So they got a hold of it somehow and scanned them in. That's
and
how
blessed
I,
their heart
and
because
I didn't
I'm
post
so
them,
freaking excited about
but
that.
But there was like 7 pages somebody, and they just looked freaking awesome. Yeah. I mean, it was...
It's Andy Kubert is like on steroids or something. He's
all jacked up.
Well, I mean, if they're reprinting Son of the Demon, I'd just love to see DC throw some work towards Mike W. Barr.
Oh, I agree. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Right. And this is coming right out of events from Son of the Demon, so... that it says that it's being reprinted. I haven't seen a release date on those, but
it's like $5.99 and it's coming out. I think around
probably the month before that.
I need to try to sell my hardcovers on eBay right now.
Yeah, before they dip in price. More Brian K. Vaughan news. He's doing Doctor Strange, but he's also doing. It looks like a mini called Pride of Baghdad. It's about a family of lions that escaped during the U.S. invasion. So as political as Brian K. Vaughan's work can be, you know, Ex Machina, whatnot, this could be interesting. I'll pick it up. It's Vaughn.
He's political, but he's not – I mean, he doesn't
– It's not in your
– Well, no, he doesn't take a stance. He
yeah.
examines
yeah.
situations and –
He'll
know,
give it
questions.
Both sides.
He does a really good. I mean, if you read Ex Machina, it's.
Yeah.
I love that about that book.
The art in Pride of Baghdad just looks beautiful. I think isn't it a hardcover OGN?
Well, you have better news than the newsman. I have.
You're
not,
the new newsman.
You are the new newsman. Be here every Friday at 7.
Sorry. Now I'm just a dick.
Hey, thanks a lot, Steve. You got
Steve,
any other corrections for the news? Or
don't worry, Steve. You were a dick before.
Okay, well, good to know. I'm consistent.
Got any grammar corrections?
How's my hair?
you need to do something with the side.
Nice.
Yeah, they're great.
I have no hair, basically. Regular DMZ artist Riccardo Buccelli, if that's how you say it, slowed down by an eye condition, which it sucks because I love the art in DMZ. So really hope that he has a quick return. But we're actually going to see Brian Wood pencil DMZ. So,
cool.
Yeah.
I love Brian Wood's stuff, but I've
never seen
him
pencil.
I've seen him do some stuff. He does some covers, but I haven't seen any actual sequential stuff. I don't know if he has done much or what he's done. I'm sure he's done something at some point.
You know, if it's Brian Wood, I don't care. I'm gonna
he's
buy
just so
it.
Talented
Steve, have you been keeping up with the Brian Wood titles, DMZ and local and supermarket?
I picked up the first DMZ trade, but I haven't read it yet.
Oh, so good. Pick up Local. Such a good book. And Supermarket. I mean, anything this guy does right now is just there's the Brian Wood appreciation moment for the week.
The check will be coming in.
Yes.
And he has integrity. He won't work. I guess he's been getting plenty of offers to do mainstream stuff, and he doesn't want to do it.
Good.
So
good. It's pretty
interesting.
I don't want to see him pulled away from what he creatively wants to do, because I love it all. Okay, our last in Woo! All these announcements. So apologies to all the amazing other publishers that send us news, like Boom and Image and Ape and all those guys. We will focus on more alternative stories next week, but it was just a big news week for mainstream. 100 Bullets and Why the Last Man have not officially had their end runs announced, but it is looking like 100 Bullets is going to end at issue 100, which we've kind of speculated from almost the beginning. And Why the Last Man is looking like number 60, and I think it's on number 46 came out this last week, so 14 more issues of Brian K. Vaughan goodness.
I'm reading it in trade, so.
Yeah, me too. So
it doesn't mean anything. Nah. New story.
What'd you have there, Steve?
Oh, I'm reading both series in trade, so.
Yeah, actually, I am too. I
am the only one on the panel that can't shed the monthlies on those, because I love them so much.
If anyone's interested, I have a whole stack full of 100 bullets, single issues that I'm looking to sell for the trades, because
I've got the entire series 1, 2 to whatever they're on, and I'm so bad because I probably should get in and trade, because I usually will collect them and read them as they come out.
You can't read them month to month. It's too complex. It's too.
Then I go back and I read them as an arc. But Why the Last Man, I have to read it every month, because
it's okay.
He is the best cliffhanger guy out there. The cliffhangers in Why are the best. So.
But Vertigo does such a good job with their trades that I know that those are going to be in trade, so I'll support them then. And, you know, my smaller indie books that I'm not sure if they're going to make it to a trade, mm-hmm. I tend to go with individual issues on. And
yeah, Vertigo is way better about their trade schedule than the parent company.
Oh, yeah.
It's DC stuff you can wait forever.
And Brian K. Vaughan.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about it before. We talked to Ed Brubaker and Mike Lark last year at Wizard World, and part of the reason they factored into their decision to go to Marvel was how bad DC was dragging their feet on the Gotham Central trades. They really felt like they hung that series out to dry by not releasing it in trades and then canning it. So,
Back to Why the Last Man, I just want to say Brian K. Vaughan had, you know, lesbian heroes before they were, you know, popular.
Passé. The whole world.
Hey, Strangers in Paradise, pal.
They weren't exactly heroes.
Oh, yeah.
You got to go back to Maggie and Hope.
Yeah.
Sue Storm's bye, isn't
Maggie
she?
And Hope.
Oh, God. You guys. All right. That's our.
These
our
mainstream guys don't even know who Maggie and Hope is.
Always behind the curve.
Sandra and Jill.
Boo. I thought, like, Lucy from Charlie Brown.
Stop. She's now we're going to get into Our Gang Woodstock. Slash fiction. Here it goes.
Woodstock. It's a woman.
All right. That's your news. What's let's go over to Top of the Stack.
Top of the stack.
That's right, it's Top of the Stack. It's our chance to let you, the listener, know what our panel has been reading for the last week. So our first Top of the Stack today will be Mr. Tom Caters.
My Top of the Stack is... I thought Sal was going first, so that's why I just went...
Mine
is the... Max Immortal, it's a graphic novel by Rick Veitch, and it is one of the most thought-provoking things I've read. I finished it on the train, like about 5 minutes in my train ride home the other day, and I sat the rest of the train ride trying to figure out what it meant, which wasn't a bad thing. If you like an ending that makes complete sense and wraps up nicely, this probably won't be the type of book that you want. It's sort of a take on the whole Superman mythology and how it ties into the idea of Superman, like how that same sort of germ in our minds that has people create superheroes also sort of allows us to create horrible things like nuclear bombs and weapons and how it makes us delusional. So it's a real nice tie-in of all these really actually deep sort of ideas. It follows a very sort of Cavalier and Clay-ish type storyline, but it came out 4 years before Cavalier and Clay. So it's definitely not a ripoff about two comics creators that create a character called True Man, who also happens to be an actual hidden being in that the U.S. government uses instead of the nuclear bomb. It's like a huge lie.
It's a secret weapon.
It's a secret weapon, and they somehow are receiving images of this True Man, like through sort of like almost dreamlike state, and it sort of explores all these things. And the one huge weakness that True Man has is like human feces.
Oh,
like
God.
Yeah, so it's pretty graphic.
Wow.
And it's black and white, and it's interesting. You'll definitely.
I'm not sure what that says.
You'll have to think about it.
This is not.
I've thought about
feces.
It a lot, and I have a theory about what that means.
What the human feces?
Yeah,
mean,
because so I don't want
to
ruin the end for you. That they call.
Yeah,
it
I
want to
read it. I mean, you've got kryptonite. Nice.
But it sort of ties into the whole idea of like the worst qualities in man sort of produce the best things and the worst things, and how that all.
It's a thinker's book.
It's a thinker's book. Yeah.
You've got me
it's
sold.
It's very thought provoking. It's very wordy. It takes a while to read. It's
oh, forget it then.
My
local.
Manager of my local comic shop told me about it.
Yeah, the sun shines on a dog's ass every once in a while.
I got a watch,
he
broken
also
watch
suggest,
that works
twice. He also
twice
tried to get me to buy all the back issues of Cable Deadpool.
Oh, well.
So.
There you go. Hey, he's you know, batting 500.
Yeah,
no,
all right. Mr. Bryant, what is your top of the stack this week?
Actually, I probably have the most mainstream top of the stack.
Athena Volterra?
I had planned on Five Fists of Science. Because I knew we were going to be doing, you know, top of the stack, but...
Ooh, do it. Do that one. Do that one. No, sorry, what was it?
My shop didn't get it in yet. I had pre-ordered it, and it hasn't shown up, so I'm going to go with Wonder Woman number one.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
And I should probably preface this by outing myself and saying, I did not read Infinite Crisis. I'm the one comic reader that did not get the series.
That's all right.
We still like you.
Yeah, okay. Whatever.
Wonder Woman number one by Alan Heinberg, who I think was doing Young Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
And the first season of OC.
And Rachel Dodson, who, among other things, did the Black Cat series with Kevin Smith. And it was colored by Alex Sinclair, who probably is best known to me as coloring Brent Anderson on Astro City. And like I said, I did not read Infinite Crisis. And this story was completely accessible to me. It's everything a first issue of a superhero book should be. It's compelling characters. It's a good starting point. The artwork is lush, wonderful storytelling. The colors are bright and vibrant. And it hooked me. I was not familiar at all with Alan Heinberg's work, but I may even check out some Young Avengers because it's just a really good, entertaining read.
Yeah, that's Young Avengers. It is just a fun read. It's Heinberg seems to grasp the whole superhero concept and be able to boil it down into what is a fun, very approachable book. So I have Wonder Woman number one also. Have not read it yet. It's probably two down in my stack.
Wait a minute.
So.
You didn't read any of Greg Rucka's Wonder Woman, but you pick up this new issue. What is that? Greg Rucka, as Mr. Greg Rucka fan number one.
It's number one.
You should be ashamed of yourself, my friend.
It's a number one issue.
They hooked
though.
You with the number one issue. You're going to put it away in Mylar. And
it's pretty.
It's bronze, darling.
Traitor. I'm sending an email to Greg Rucka.
No, I'm waiting for it in the trade.
Dearest Greg.
Dearest Mr. Rucka.
So, Steve, did you have anything else to say about Wonder Woman?
No, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great read.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful artwork, and I don't want to spoil anything, so it's just a good starting point. Go in there with no expectations, no understanding, and they'll give you a fun ride.
Sal, what is your top of the stack?
I had a really tough time picking one this week because I had three or four books that I really, really enjoyed being punished. The new Punisher book, the new Detective Comics book, which I think is some of the best Superman or best Batman stuff that I've seen in a long time. The new Walking Dead was phenomenal. Civil War Frontline was great, but the book I picked is a smaller book from Image Comics called The Emissary. And it's called Jim Valentino's The Emissary. I'm not sure why, because I don't know what he had to do with it. But anyway, The Emissary is about kind of questioning what would happen if a guy one day in the middle of the afternoon walked into Times Square, took off his jacket, and flew up into the air, claiming to be an emissary, bringing the world into the future and giving them some message. As you would probably expect, the world freaks. People panic. News stations rush to try and get the story. The military attacks. And the whole time you're sort of asking who or what is the emissary. This is done, written by Jason Rand, art by Juan Ferreira, and you may be familiar with their other book from Image called Small Gods.
Oh.
Which I'm a big fan of that book. And what I like about it so much is they have a very good ability to sort of put you in the feeling of you're experiencing a real world and what happens when extraordinary things happen to everyday people. They did that in Small Gods a lot, and they've continued to do that in this book, where you, from the very beginning, you get the sense that this is a very tangible, real-world story, and then this amazing thing happens that you don't see in everyday life, and how do people react to it? The first issue, it doesn't answer any questions. All it does is ask questions and makes you ask questions. Which is tough because it's a first issue and they have to try and set everything up and give you a hook and a reason to come back, and they did that. I think one of the things that I'm going to look at in the future of this book, and what I'm most interested in, is that the emissary happens to also be black. And I'm wondering how much of that is going to play out in the future of the series. If that was I assume a conscious decision. I'd imagine it's probably not just an aesthetic choice, as opposed to it somehow going to play out, because this character in this first issue, you get the sense that people may be looking at him as some sort of messiah or the return of Jesus. But how would people react if Jesus was black?
Well, I know how Chris Rock reacted in Dogma.
Anyway. So, thanks for that. The art is extremely good. Juan Ferreira stuff, he has a very good attention to detail. He does great backgrounds, and it just adds to the tangible feeling of realness in this story, because his facial expressions, his clothing is extremely good, the backgrounds are extremely good. But then he's also really good at giving you the scene that is explosive or powerful or extraordinary. So the only issue I may have had with it, I thought dialogue-wise there were some problems, but nothing major that,
should. Well, you're a dialogue junkie.
Yeah,
like
I am.
Me,
so, but overall, I really enjoyed it, and I'm very interested to see where it's going to go. So that's my top of the stack.
Very good. I thought it was like a Star Trek DS9 issue.
I don't know what that is.
Because who was the guy that played Cisco on...
You're looking at the wrong guy.
Oh, sorry, geek. Sorry. I'm just into comics, man.
But it looks like Cisco from Star Trek Deep Space Nine, who was also the emissary. And I was like, is that a Star Trek book? So.
The only thing that was a little off-putting from it, mm-hmm. also was that he does show up in a superhero-esque kind of costume. It's like a red and black leather. Mm-hmm. And I almost would have preferred if he was just wearing like a pair of jeans and a t-shirt.
Superboy-esque? Like Superboy? Jeans and a t-shirt?
Yeah, something like that, but maybe not with a big red S on the... Yeah. But otherwise, I thought it was really interesting.
Okay, well, I'll check it out. Here's my top of the stack / rant this week. It's not a rant. It's a plea. I told Tom on my way in that, Tom, I'm gonna lay down my Queen and Country cross for a while.
And pick up the Exterminators one.
I'm picking up.
I will help you carry that cross.
It's two people carrying the cross. Three people with Sal.
I'm right there with you guys. It's great
time, listeners out there. It's time to pick up the Exterminators cross. This is a truly spectacular book, and I'm not saying this to build it up into something it's not. This is a great book. It is written by Simon Oliver. It has art by Tony Moore, and Andy Parks is doing inks, which that's another just amazing talent. And yeah, Andy Parks.
God, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, Andy Parks is doing
he's
inks.
He's always been
it.
Doing the inks on the
I don't know if he's always been doing them, but he's doing them now. Oh, and wow. So, you know, that's a name. Just for that reason, Andy Parks is such a good guy. You should get this book. We've talked about this. God, maybe every episode there's an Exterminators reference.
It's made top of the stack like three or four times.
It is.
Everyone's picked it at one point or another.
It is fun. It is creepy. It is so very well layered in its storytelling. There's multiple story arcs going on. The dialogue is crisp. It is so well told. Tony Moore's art, if Tony Moore isn't my favorite artist, I don't know if I could name another one that I like right
Rob
now.
Rob Liefeld.
Yeah. The Exterminators is an amazing series put out by Vertigo, and it is the lowest-selling, non-canceled book that DC puts out. It is selling about 11,000 copies an issue, and that is wrong. I'm point blank, that's wrong. This book is one of, in my opinion, the best titles out there today. It is so good that Sal told me that Tony Moore posted on his MySpace account. You told me about this. Go ahead.
It's your story.
Yeah, he had. Well, first I wanted to preface it by saying I remember when we talked to maybe it was an interview. Rick Remender was talking mm-hmm. this book up before it came out, and he said he pleaded with people to buy it because Tony was a friend of his, and he felt that Tony was really putting everything he had into the art of this book. And I completely agree. I think it's the best work he's ever done. Mm-hmm. It's just phenomenal looking. But recently, because of the low sales, Tony posted on his MySpace page that he knew people weren't buying it, but he wanted people to read it because he really was putting a lot into it. So he posted links to
a torrent
BitTorrent site,
yeah. site
with the first five issues on there. And he said, you know what? I don't care. The thousand people that may download it that didn't buy it, at least they're reading it.
Yeah.
And that, I think, says a lot from
shows
a guy,
you know, how much he cares about this. I think a lot of people got turned off to this book because they thought it was just like a creepy horror book. It's about bugs, but it's not about bugs. Bugs are in it. It's about a pest control company, but it's about government conspiracy. And
you know what?
It's a buddy book.
It felt to me like some of the best of like Outer Limits or Twilight Zone episodes, you know, where it was. On the surface, it was about, you know, these creatures, these bugs, mm-hmm. but underneath that, there was so much more to it, and that's sort of what it reminded me of.
It's a character book. It's like Walking Dead. Walking Dead is not a book about zombies. Walking Dead is a book about people that are in a world filled with zombies. Exterminators is a fantastic character book that these characters are just in a very, very
strange
situation.
World.
And I'm not saying that it's a normal. I mean, yeah, it's creepy, and it's. I mean, there's some really gross parts in it, but they're funny gross parts. I'm pleading with you, if you have not checked out The Exterminators, issue number 6 is out. It starts a new story arc. You can pick it up and get going on it. They're going to release, I believe, the first five issues as a trade.
Yeah.
Don't wait. If they have them at your comic shop, pick them up. If you can still order them, if you're an online and you can still get them through Diamond, order them. The Exterminators is a brilliant, brilliant, fantastic book that deserves to stay alive. And at 11,000 copies an issue, it's not going to. So please pick up Exterminators. And that's all I have to say about it.
Yeah, do yourself a favor. Put down that extra variant cover, you know, whatever, and pick up an issue of Exterminators.
No pencil sketches.
Yeah. It's
please.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's just an extremely good book that should be selling.
And if you do, email us and let us know what you think about it. If you hate it, let us know, because
we'll call you stupid.
We won't call you stupid. But I... if you pick this up and you don't like it, I want to know why, because I can't understand why anyone wouldn't like this book. So anyway, that I'm going to step off the soapbox, and Exterminators number 6 came out this previous week. It is a wonderful book. Please pick it up. If your local comic shop has past issues, grab them, email us, let us know what you think of it, and enjoy it, because it's awesome. So anyway, that's top of the stack. Okay, let's spend a couple minutes with our guest of honor today. Steve, you know, if you listen to a podcast out there, you've heard about Athena Voltaire. We've talked about it. We've actually been amazed at how many other creators we talk to that say, oh, yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. We had Matt Fraction on a couple weeks ago, and he had really kind things to say about it. Tell us a little bit about Athena and when we're going to be able to see more of her amazing adventures.
Well, first of all, I just have to say, don't you hate it when you get, you know, talking to a creator at a con or on a podcast and you say, what's your book about? And they ramble on for like 10 minutes.
That's what you're getting ready to do, aren't you?
Nope. it's, you know, Indiana Jones starring a James Cameron style female pilot. That's the high concept that we sold it on. It's 1930s adventure with, you know, Nazi occultism and a kick-ass babe at the helm taking on the Nazis and occult menaces. So that's the long and short of it. It's just fun. Now, if you want a little more involved answer, we're doing a 4-issue miniseries coming out from Ape Entertainment. It's in the most recent previews. Order code JUN062854.
Pre-order.
Yeah, well, actually, to go on my little soapbox here, if you want to check out the book, we have the first 22 pages posted at athenavoltaire.com/preview.html. Or just go to Athena Voltaire and you'll see the link for the preview. Get the first 22 pages. I can tell you right now, if you read the first 22 pages and like it, just add it to your pull list, because that gives you a really good idea of where we're going to go.
Yeah.
You read the first 22 pages and say, well, I'll have to pick it up and look at it, you're probably not going to like the book, so you don't need to worry about seeking it out. I mean, that's the long and short of it. It's you can read essentially a whole issue's worth of content, and if you like it, please, by all means, pre-order it, but you might not.
I've read it.
It there.
I like it. It's a fun book, and you can tell when a creator really pours themselves into something, and you guys have pretty much put everything you've got into this book. It's when was Athena's origin point? How long have you been with this character now?
96.
Okay, she's an old friend.
Well, it was an idea of something. I just kind of eventually came up with what would be my dream project to work on, and I shelved it when I tried to start breaking in. I think I started slapping portfolios around in 99 or 2000, and I always thought, you know, once I break in, this will be the thing I'll come back to when I'm good enough. A couple of years of carrying my portfolio around and hearing answers like, you know, you're this close, or if this were 10 years ago, I could give you work,
yeah,
or you're 85% there, you know, all these other types of things that, you know, editors don't owe people in portfolio lines any work.
Yeah.
You know, and an editor's job is to get the books out on time, and there are so many talented, dependable people that already have, you know, jobs or need jobs. My answer was to kind of go, well, what can I do that nobody else is doing? And I went back to my dream project, and I probably wasn't ready for it when I started it, but, you know, I've been doing it for a couple of years, and I think we're kind of getting a handle on it. So, yeah, you know, it's just pouring in all the stuff that we love to do.
Well, you guys jump in there and do it. You are going to have the re-release, because it's going to actually be issue 1 and 2. Issue 1 from Speakeasy is being wrapped into the Ape Entertainment release. Is that correct?
Yes.
And that is, you guys are going to debut that at San Diego?
I hope we're going to have copies in place for San Diego. The big concern is I really don't want to sell something that retailers don't have a chance to have.
Mm-hmm.
But by the same token, you know, I've been going to conventions for 3 years promoting the damn webcomic and just giving out postcards and free stuff, and it would be really nice to be able to sell a book.
Go sell it. Go sell it. Sell it.
We don't want to offend any retailers, so if we have it in time for San Diego, I'm not sure what we'll do.
You're not going to offend our retailers in Chicago, so go sell it.
Okay. Is that okay with you, Mark? You around?
You're off, man.
Yeah. And then Wizard World Chicago is 2 weeks after San Diego, and then I believe that we're going to have you in store and in studio for a little book signing and another appearance on the show. Is that kind of what we're looking at this point?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Awesome. We'll have to get you up in the shop, and we'll get some more people turned on to the book. We'll hang out with you at Wizard World and probably get into some trouble there. So we're looking forward to that. But yeah, keep us updated on what's going on. We're looking forward to the re-release of it.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you guys have supported us and pimped us between you guys and the Comic Geek Speak podcast. I feel like for a while there, you know, we were a drinking game. Anytime a podcast mentioned a book, I felt like somebody had to chug.
You can talk about, you know, a million established people and creators and entertainment outlets. Those folks don't need it. They spend a lot of time and effort and have paid their dues to get where they are, but you guys are working extra hard to get a product out there, and we love the fact that we can talk about your book and maybe turn one or two or 10 or 25 people onto the book. And if we can do that, that's our whole goal with this podcast, is to try and get people to read books like Athena Voltaire and Exterminators and Queen and Country and The Flash.
Yeah, you need to get that quick.
You know, from my perspective, every one or 10 or 25 readers that help out the book, those numbers are huge. Because I feel really badly, and let me just kind of go into my mea culpa here real quick. I feel really badly that we're reissuing essentially the Speakeasy first issue with the second, the unreleased second issue folded in. But
why do you feel bad? I mean, I think it was a great idea to support people that may have been following it or were expecting it. I mean, I don't think you have anything to apologize for.
We never got our paper copies of the Speakeasy, so damn it, I want that first issue.
Okay,
so
well,
don't
yeah.
feel bad.
And well, that's good. But I feel bad for the people that bought it once that, may feel like, they're being gouged for having to buy it a second.
For a buck and a half, screw them.
Well, and, my angle on this is also, there's not a lot of money in indie books. First of all, we're probably not going to see any money from the Speakeasy book. And I doubt, with the print numbers of indie stuff, that, I'll be making more than a buck an hour for the time I put in.
Oh, sure.
So, we're not doing this for money, I guess is what I'm getting at. We are doing this because we want to be able to do a book that will at least pay for itself and, hopefully try to establish some kind of career and readership.
Well, I think it will. I think that you guys have come in at a nice time where it's been an interesting marriage between your book and some other podcasts out there, and I think that it's going to drum up some interest in it, and we definitely have our shop excited about it, and I know that the north side of Chicago is going to treat Athena very well, so we are looking forward to it.
Thank you. And one last thing for me to just kind of clarify, I'm just really excited to be Ape is a really good place to be.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, they've got a nice diverse line of books, and, they get really excited about the stuff they're putting out. The Black Coat, Horrorwood, UTF, Sullen Gray, they're all different books with their own identity, and it's just nice to be a part of that.
The Black Coat is an awesome book.
Oh, Francesca's art. Just
it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. So it's and we love Ape because, well, they're apes, or Tom loves Ape.
Love anything involving apes.
Well, going back to, you know, what we were saying a little bit ago, you know, in regards to, we like to talk about smaller books and independent books and try and turn people on, you know, and your situation in particular, I mean, you've been through not only, you know, sort of the normal hardships of trying to get your own book published, but, I mean, you know, what you guys went through with that book and with Speakeasy is a little bit above and beyond, you know, what was necessary, I think. So, you know, it for us to try and help you out in any way is, you know, a pleasure to because I think it's a testament to you guys that you stuck with it. I mean, I think a lot of people would have maybe just said, forget it, you know, when that happened and given up tried to go on to something else. But, you know, you guys believed in it and stuck with it, and it's good to see that you landed on your feet with Ape and hopefully, you know, nothing but good things from here on out, and the worst is behind you.
Thanks, man. I hope so. It never really occurred to me that we could stop. So I don't know if
that's you can tell.
Or if that's just stupidity.
Well, I mean, you can tell. We've talked about it before. It's like, you know, how did these guys keep going on? And it's neat that you say that stopping was never an option. So
we're punch drunk.
Very cool. too stupid to quit.
Too many blows to the head.
Well, guys, I think that's gonna wrap up another episode of Around Comics. Do we have any other announcements? I think we bumped the announcements to the top of the episode because we figured that we were wearing people out by the end.
I did want to mention I did put Top of the Stack back on the website, so you can go back and it's actually up to date. You can go back and look at all the Top of the Stack stuff that we've done over the last 24 episodes. So that's back on the site. Haikus.
Oh,
we were gonna read a couple of haikus. Really? We've had a tremendous response to our haiku contest, and Steve actually entered at the beginning of the show. But I just wanted to read a couple that people have emailed us, and most of these are people that we haven't had on the forum at all. People that don't post on the forum.
And we're gonna read all of the haikus as they come in.
This one is by Matthew from Plaucheville, Louisiana, Plauchevillee. And he said, coming together for DC, Marvel, Indie, and Here Begins Debate.
Nice. So that
was Matthew. Haiku. John Hook.
I love John Hook.
John Hook's entry was...
He writes Revere.
Revere?
Steve,
Alias.
Help me out. What?
For Alias?
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes.
Oh, well, he entered our contest.
And he's a huge Queen and Country fan.
All right, well. He said, small press comics fan, spank my bear red baboon ass, my name is John Hook.
Where's the shameless self-promotion in there, John?
I'm counting along with all these, because if someone doesn't do it correct, I will immediately call them out.
Paper Cut, you know, who
he's going to send like 100.
Yeah, if you've been on the forum, he's, you know his posts are novels.
Legendary.
And, yeah, I mean, they're fantastic. The guy has, and he's actually started to write a column for us now.
Mm-hmm.
He has his first one up, and he has a lot to say, and he's a very bright guy. He sent in like 30 of them. Already. So I'm gonna read a couple. The first one here is Xavier Calls. We must save those who hate us, and the dream lives on.
Nice.
And let's see. Another one. Poor Alex Luthor. Lesson learned by masterminds. Let the Joker play.
Nice.
Yeah, Paper Cut.
I have one for him. Paper Cut, please stop.
No.
Do you have too much free time? Please get a girlfriend. I just made that up right now. I don't know if you have one or not. It was just a joke.
The opinions of Tom Caters are not representative.
Paper Cut is like an honorable addition to the panel. We love Paper Cut.
No, I was counting along with you, Tom, and you did play it by the rules.
Thank you. The whole time he was reading, I'm just sitting there going, please... get Clay just sitting there. Cutting.
Here's one. Here's one from Ed Mayer of Illinois. He's from Illinois. Mm-hmm. He said, "Around Comics podcast is best. Robots and monkeys in the spotlight here. Tom Caters has great taste."
We have a winner.
Wait a minute. Tom Caters has great taste.
Tom Caters has great taste. That's six.
That's only six. Oh, no.
Ed?
Uh-oh.
Ed, are you too stupid to count some of those? That's six, buddy.
Ed, I'm sorry.
It was so close.
I think I could change it so it'll work. Tom Caters has crappy taste. That one works.
Tom Caters has crappy taste. What is that, eight now?
I don't
know.
Anyway.
has crappy taste. That's seven.
So that's most of them. Like I said, Paper Cut sent in a bunch, but I'm not going to read them all here.
Get back to writing your column.
So those are some of the email haiku entries, and we've had a bunch on the forum.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fun. You can go there and read. But
I only picked on Paper Cut because there's a lot of haiku.
The guy, man, he can type. I'll tell you that.
Okay. Around Comics, and I'm getting close to actually not having to read this announcement anymore. We'll change it to a Steve Bryant's announcement here pretty soon. But Around Comics and Dark Tower are pleased to announce that Michael Berry and Joe Bucco, the creators of Werewolves Call of the Wild, will be in store and in studio on Friday, June 30th, for a book signing and guest appearance on the show.
Are they going to stick around?
Yes.
We should work on making it more natural next week.
Check out their book at cotwcomic.com and listen to Around Comics for more information on the appearance. Please check out Werewolves Call of the Wild. Very good book. They're going to be here in
Werewolves.
Yeah.
In London. At his
All right. I would like to thank everyone on the panel. Tom, it was so good to have you back. These guys were beating the crap out of me the last
week.
It's all right. The last episode was okay.
You can't.
No, I'm kidding. It was good. I only listen to it when I'm not on, because when you've already sat through like 2.5 hours of talking, the last thing you want to do is spend another 2.5
yeah,
hours
listening
like,
to what
listening
you said.
Tell me about it. I do it every weekend.
Sal, as always, thank you for the amazing job that you do listening to the show three times and mixing and editing and producing. He is truly my partner in crime and the producer of the show. So thank you, Sal.
Thank you. You're welcome.
And our guest of honor, Mr. Bryant. Thank you so much. We're going to have you back real soon. We already have that set up. And best of luck getting Athena relaunched and off to a tremendous start at Ape Entertainment.
Thanks for letting me play along. And thanks for promoting the book.
Keep on trucking.
Right back at the bar.
Yeah. More lesbian zombie-killing Asian women, though. And you gotta
Nazis.
Then you're gonna get that Eisner, buddy. I tell you, the Eisner board likes nothing more.
Do we have an explicit tag yet? Do you think? Because
Tom's getting ready to get us one.
I don't want to make the last minute have an explicit tag.
Tom sees the card at the edge of the cliff and says, "If I just touch it right here, it'll go over."
I'll save it. Okay. Email me and I'll tell you guys the joke I just thought of. Tom Caters@gmail.com.
All right. Well, Steve, once again, thank you very much. Everyone, have a fantastic week. We will be back again next Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime, we will be everywhere in
and around comics.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. For that and the latest in comics news and opinions, go to www.aroundcomics.com. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next week. With a panel will change, but our mission stays the same, bringing you the best in discussion, news, and reviews in and around comics.